They'll never know what's in my magic bag.
Charlie, look, you hit the jackpot. Attaboy, Charlie, I'm proud of you. Charlie, tell him.
Oh, you can't keep a good dog down.
No, sir.
No, you can't keep a good dog down. I've seen pain and hurt.
That's right.
I've eaten dirt.
Well.
A lot of wells.
It's because I got stuck in a well and I was feeling very smug about it.
I was just imagining you surrounded by wells, like, this is unfortunate.
I'm at like the world's largest garden center. And none of them are up to my liking. Or I think that I've tricked all these wells and I've not. If anything else, they've trapped me down there, so it looks like I'm gonna be the one who's
usually how it goes.
Yeah, basically. Please send food. Anyway.
Hi, guys.
Hi, everybody. Oh, my God. We've tried to record this episode about 3 times now.
This is try and number 3.
Through various circumstances and other things somewhat beyond our control, other things within our control, but just not working out timing-wise.
Yeah.
We've attempted to record this episode of Animation Station. Oh, I'm Tracy.
And I'm Robbie.
So, I mean, you guys, I'm sure you know the deal by now. But,
they got really confused for a second. I don't know which one's which.
Yeah, it's like, really? Like, think about this. Think about it. Whose basement are you in? No. No, so, yeah, so our film this week is All I Just Go to Heaven.
Yeah.
And we had a weird time recording this, I guess, because, like, so initially we tried recording it. We lost the audio.
Yes.
Because...
My computer just...
No, because Audacity decided to just kind of, like...
Take a dump.
Yeah, like, just crap out all over everything. And just be like...
Checked out.
Remember that hour or so that you guys contributed towards making some kind of podcasty thingy? Yeah.
No.
That didn't happen.
Me neither.
We're just going to cover it up. We're just going to pretend that didn't happen.
Well, yeah, the greatest part was I actually managed to recover it, but I recovered it as 50 minutes of silence.
As 50 minutes of silence?
Yes.
Wow, that was considerate of him.
Like, thanks, buddy.
Like,
you jerk.
That's so dumb. Well, no, because I thought initially you were looking at it and it recorded them, or like it took them into.
Like, well, yeah, so like when.
6 second increments?
Yeah, so what. I don't fully understand it or why that's like the way that it does it, but when Audacity saves a file. It saves it into, like, 6 second increments, and not mind you, chronologically, just random bits and pieces here and there.
Wait, was that just, like, a settings thing, or it just decided that it hated you?
No, that's just how Audacity functions.
How is that a function, Audacity? You couldn't have not been staying out in, like, the final bug thing?
Yeah.
Like,
it's
oh my gosh.
Just, I don't know, maybe it's, I don't know.
That's ridiculous. Oh my gosh.
I mean, so anywho, we lost
anyway,
our Audacity stuff.
And we lost those, and then we're like, alright, well, crap, this past weekend I was out of town, and we were trying to see if we could get that episode in the can. We're actually recording this, I'm sorry that this last episode was like, that was also my bad.
Yeah, we're all over the place right now. Sorry, guys.
We're at a very weird, like, crossroads right now because a lot of things have just been kind of picking up for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I started taking a class downtown, like, a children's book illustration class. Yeah. So that's, like, that has to be spoken for a solid 2 evenings out of the week, which you would think would not be that much, but no, I basically don't end up home until 11:30 midnight, so.
Yeah, well, it really does, like.
Yeah.
When you have a full-time job, like, anything that eats your evening
really,
like...
Like, it really, like, hits you hard. But yeah. I mean, I'm really having fun with the class, but it's just the whole matter of, like...
Time.
I don't have the time where it's just, like, I can feel my butts getting bigger. Because I haven't... No, but not in a good way. Like, because I haven't been working out as much and stuff. You know, like little things like that. But, no, you know, like, just stuff like that. So basically, we realized that since I was going to be out of town... We d- we tried to record a
during our lunch breaks.
During a lunch break at work.
That failed.
I mean, we recorded some of it, but
we got a good half of it, but I feel like it was
probably
so a
hot
much.
In the car, and we were just kind of uncomfortable, where we were just like, we were trying to get through it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, well, and then, like, and the next, like, so we essentially were like, all right, we can do this in 2 days. And then, like, the next day, everything at work was crazy, so there was no way our lunch would
coincide. I mean, like, I don't even think I got a lunch
day.
Break on, like, Thursday or whatever it was. Like, one of those days was really, really busy.
It was Friday.
Yeah, it was Friday. Oh, that's right, it was Friday. Did I count for that on my hours? Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. So, yeah, I remember not taking a lunch on that day.
That sucks.
So, it was not fun. But, anywhoozle.
So here we are trying to record it again.
With our typical setup. So, like, typically, when we record these, we do it on my computer. So,
yeah.
As long as my computer does not crap out again, this should work fine. But anyway, let's get down to the actual nitty-gritty of
the actual movie.
Which is All Dogs Go to Heaven.
So, All Dogs Go to Heaven. Is 1989?
89, yeah. Robbie.
I remember stuff sometimes. Yeah. it was a 1989 animated movie. Directed by Don Bluth.
Calypso.
are we Pirates of the Caribbean now? Is that
my cousin can do a much better impersonation than I can. I just think that Davy Jones is ridiculous.
With Bill Nye.
Yeah,
my God. Oh, man, he's awesome.
And his creepy tentacle face.
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry, that has nothing to do with any of that.
We're tired, guys.
We're very tired. Calypso. Whoa. I would like a desk and a big bookshelf. Full of smaller cubes. Perhaps books.
Perhaps companion cubes.
Oh my God, you did not.
I did.
Why haven't they made a companion cube Rubik's Cube yet? Or have they, and did I miss that boat?
I think we may have missed that boat.
Damn it.
We could be wrong. Hit us up if you know about it.
Hey guys, tweet at us with hashtag companion cube questions. If you can alleviate this immense conundrum we've just found ourselves in. Oh my God.
So All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Clearly we're at that point where we're very slap happy, so I'm going to go ahead and, like, if you're still listening at this point, thank you.
Good for you. Thank you, and also good for
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. And yeah, let's get into the story. Okay, so basic premise here. All Dogs Go to Heaven, 1989 Don Bluth film that's about Charlie B. Barkin, who is he's a dog and a con artist. A dog artist.
He's definitely not that.
No, he's not a dog artist.
But
yeah, so what happens is that it's the late 1930s, 1939, in mm-hmm. New Orleans. And
New Orleans.
Yeah, in New Orleans. Collapse. Sorry.
Oh, man.
I'm a dork. Anyway. So Charlie is breaking out of jail. He was framed for whatever crime it was that brought him in there. And his best friend, Itchy Ford, whatever his name is.
Yeah, I don't...
And they give him a full name in the second movie, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, anyway.
Second movie's not canon.
Yeah, exactly. It really isn't. Like, it's like, that they do not exist in the same world. But yeah, so what happens is that Itchy breaks Charlie out of jail, and they find their way back to Carface and Charlie's, which is this gigantic casino that Charlie co-owns and operates, or formerly co-owned and operate with his business partner, Carface, who's this very surly, very menacing-looking bulldog that must smoke, like, I don't even know how much a day. Probably probably like a carton of smokes
a
day.
Well, no, because he does cigars.
Okay, then a box of cigars a day. It sounds
Christ.
Like... I mean, it sounds kind of like he polished his vocal cords on gravel. So... Like he makes it a regular thing for him to eat an entire can of tuna. And by that I mean the actual can, like the rusty part of it.
Like the whole thing.
Yeah, like he will take the part that you're supposed to take off with can opener and he will have the whole thing in one go. But Carface has had he's got a very greedy streak in him. And he had framed Charlie. Charlie does not realize it.
Right.
But Carface had framed Charlie to end up going into jail so that he could usurp and take the business away from him.
Yeah.
But Charlie gets broken out. He thought that he was on death row. But now Carface has to think of another way to get rid of him.
So he tries to kill him.
Yes.
After a welcome back party.
A welcome back party on a gigantic Mardi Gras float, which looks kind of ominous a bit.
Yeah.
Itchy overhears two of Carface's minions, one of which is named Killer, that's voiced by Charles Nelson Reilly, who was later in a couple other Don Bluth movies, I believe.
He was definitely in Rockadoodle.
Yeah, he was in Rockadoodle. He what is his name? The little owl that has, like, a little pocket knife or whatever. Yeah. I forget what his name
he's
is.
He's like a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, he's...
That guy was awesome.
He's so ridiculous. But, yeah, so Itchy overhears them plotting about how they're going to be killing, Charlie after the party. So what happens is that they get Charlie drunk, like, actually drunk.
Yeah, no, they're legitimately, like, dogs drinking beer.
Yeah, this is a very weird universe where the dogs drink beer, they get drunk, they party, they smoke.
They occasionally have opposable thumbs.
Occasionally have opposable thumbs, enjoy a good steak. They're basically like any red-blooded American businessman in the 30s, basically.
Yeah.
Or a gangster, whatever.
Yeah, well, they're definitely gangsters.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's the only money in the 30s.
Yeah, basically.
Wait.
That in old Hollywood. And, the war effort was just about to start happening. That's a couple years.
Well, no, yeah, the New Deal hit right around there, but...
Kind of. But, so what happens is that they, Carface and his minions place Charlie on the end of a pier, and they push a, car, like, I think it's a Model T some rusty old car. They push it down the pier, and it hits Charlie and kills him, and also drowns him in the riverfront area.
Yeah.
So not only did you hit him with a car, yeah.
You drowned him.
Yeah.
He should definitely be dead. And
that's what we call thorough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just like, they will show you just the lengths that Carface will go to guarantee that he keeps that business.
Then Charlie wakes up in heaven.
Yeah.
Because all dogs go to heaven.
Title dropper.
Yep.
Bam.
And he's met by an angel whippet.
Mm-hmm.
Who explains to him the whole, like, you're in heaven, now, because all dogs go to heaven, because dogs are, like, at a base level.
Yeah, the dogs are naturally good, kind, and all that. Yeah.
Which Charlie is definitely not.
The antithesis of this, and it's demonstrated in the book that that the Angel Whippet goes through. That, like, she's like, I can't really find anything here that shows that you're, like, I can't see any redeeming qualities in here.
Yeah.
It's like, it seems
but
like
you are a dog.
Yeah, it's like, the fact that you're a dog, I guess, gives you carte blanche to be able to get into heaven at least once, even though, like, it shows, like, wow, you've done a lot of gambling, smoking, probably some racketeering.
Oh, yeah.
War profiteering. maybe, I don't know.
And so then he,
He's only two, he could have pulled something off. Three? Oh, right, yeah. He's only three, he could have pulled something off by then.
Who knows? So she also reveals to him this watch that is literally, like, his time on Earth.
Yeah, it's like, it's a symbolic, it's an item that shows what his time on Earth is.
Yeah, exactly. And so once he died, it stopped ticking.
Mm-hmm. Which, it happened to be the exact same watch that Carface gave
him
to Charlie before he died.
Yeah, right before he killed him.
Yeah.
So then he's like, well, what if I wind the watch up again?
Yeah, it's just like, well, why can't I just, bring it back? And she's like, oh, no, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
It's
so,
like, well, why not? It's like, you just can't do it. It's like, but why can't, you can't do it, Charlie.
Because you'll never be able to come back.
Because if you do it, you can't come back to heaven. He's like, oh, is that it? And he's like, all right, whatever.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and do the thing anyways.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to have two little song things that happen, and then he just... He hides the watch behind his back and then rewinds it.
Yeah.
And then is transported back to Earth.
And,
Out of the ocean of all places, where it's like, you think that if he was going to come back... Oh, no, I guess he had to because he had to swim back up.
Mm-hmm.
So
he comes back and he decides he's going to get revenge on Carface.
With the help of a very terrified Itchy, who is completely convinced that Charlie is a ghost.
Yeah,
okay. Which is like, why wouldn't he? I mean, he saw Charlie get murdered in front of his eyes.
Yeah, so I would jump to the same conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. Poor Itchy, man. Like, he puts up with so much in this movie. Oh, and he's also voiced by Dom DeLuise, which I forgot to mention.
Yeah, well, so Itchy is voiced by Dom DeLuise, and Charlie is voiced by Burt Reynolds.
Yep.
And those two are actual, like, real-life buddies.
Yeah, they were best friends for the longest time.
Yeah.
They were paired up in, from what I remember, like, in a lot of either comedic roles or films and stuff. Like, they just had a great rapport.
Yeah, yeah.
They work very well together.
Absolutely. So, so Charlie and Itchy start trying to figure out how to get revenge, and one of the things they figure is there's no way that Carface is smart enough to rig the races properly on his own.
Yeah.
So they find out that he has this little girl who can talk to animals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he's been fixing the races, because the rats will tell her who's going to win.
Yep, because at least she's nice to them.
Yeah, she's super nice because she's a sweet little girl.
She's a very sweet little orphan girl named Anne Marie.
Yes.
And voiced by Judith Barcy.
Yes, who was also the voice of Ducky in Land Before Time.
Mm-hmm. So great.
Which I think came not long before this movie.
Yeah, so Land Before Time came out in, I think, 1988? And then,
really?
Yeah. And then this movie came out in 89, because, what was it? American Tail was 85, I believe. 85 or 86, I forget. Like, I think they just kind of came one after the other. Cause the
they came pretty quickly.
But The Secret of Nim was 1982.
Yeah, that was the one,
Yeah.
We'll get into, we'll talk about a little bit more of that later. Exactly.
I think we're just already kind of getting into, like, the years and stuff. Yeah. But we'll go through his, filmography a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah. So they meet and take Anne Marie away from Carface, pretty much.
Because kidnap is such an ugly word.
I mean, it is, but they kind of do. But also, like, clearly, like, Carface didn't treat her super well. Not that they're going to.
They don't really treat her that much better either. I mean, like, arguably, they're not as threatening to Anne Marie. I guess.
Yeah.
They're more manipulative towards her. Where, like, they more play towards her emotions as opposed to Carface directly threatening her.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
So that's kind of how that it works.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily
make it any better.
No, it's different.
Yeah. Apples and oranges, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what happens is that they take Anne Marie, they kind of take her in, they let her sleep in the junkyard with
where
them.
They live.
Yeah, where they live. And they decide to go to this horse race the following morning. And steal money from a young couple, or any kind of person that they
well,
could
really... Well, yeah, like, yeah, it was
the fact
more,
that they
find
a couple was incidental.
Yeah,
but
it was
they
more
just, needed,
just like, that's
yeah.
who fell for the con.
Yeah, they needed somebody with money, and they used Anne Marie to talk to the horses at the race to find out who was going to be winning it.
And it was this this goofy old horse called the Grand Chahi.
The Grand Chahi. And the only reason he's winning is because it's his birthday, and all the other horses feel either bad or that they're obligated to make sure that he wins.
Yeah, yeah, there was a good, there was a great, like, when they're racing the one, like, there's this big pink horse, and she's like, she was talking to this other British horse with
British
a monocle.
With a monocle and with a, cigarette holder for some reason, which is like, and, yeah.
That's not good for a horse.
No, it wasn't.
But also, how are you doing that while racing?
Wasn't he also wearing a, what was it? You know, like, what are those foxing coats that they wear? You know, you know what I'm talking about? Where people go foxing and they put on those, like, red kind of racing coats.
He might have been, but I just love that scene. It's the Grand Shahi's birthday!
Oh, Reginald. Reginald, I do hate to rain on your parade. But did you know it's the Grand Shahi's birthday?
Oh, is it? Terribly sorry.
Terribly sorry, Mom.
That was amazing.
Then they immediately back off and then start pushing the Grand Shahi towards the thing because he's so slow and so old.
Yeah.
Like,
just in rough shape.
Yeah. But, like, he seems like a nice old horse.
Yeah.
So.
So they bet, obviously they bet on the Grand Shahi, who, being old and fairly, senile
useless.
As a horse, had, like, really ridiculous payout odds.
Yeah, he literally had
literally
1,000 to 1 odds.
So
whatever amount that the couple had on them that Charlie and Itchy and Anne Marie ended up using, they got back, like, tenfold.
Yeah. So they're rolling in at that
point. Yeah.
Like, right away. So then they build their own casino.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, a massive, like, bar, and it also has, like, a,
there's, like, a cabaret.
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah. That's the one. Yeah, so they make this, this other gigantic casino in the junkyard where they live, and Itchy is just this marvel of an engineer.
Yeah.
Because he manages to, like, be able to use all the equipment, he can find the exact, like, the perfect placement that he needs. Like, how many cars do I have to stack on top of this to make sure that we have our neon high enough for people to see it? Like, he, I don't know how he manages to get all the stuff.
He's a smart dog.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's clearly, like, I don't know what Charlie's talking about. I think that Itchy's clearly the brains of the operation, or at least, like, he's the one who can go about implementing everything.
He's the technical mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, he can make blueprints like you would not believe. But, yeah, it's like, so they end up opening it.
And then, I think that's the point at which Anne-Marie, accuses him as, like, you're not, like...
Well, she gets fed up. She's yeah. like, because Charlie just ends up, like, using all that money towards, just, like, gambling and keeping the business right, going and everything. Right.
And he promised her he was gonna find her parents and also, like, get her adopted.
Yeah.
But then also to give some of that money back to the poor.
Yeah.
Well,
he's just kind of, like, selfishly hiding all of it for himself.
Yeah, of course.
Which makes him basically no better than Carface. Granted, Charlie does not murder people, but... Yeah. Yeah, so he can be just as ruthless as Carface if he wants to be.
Yeah.
So.
So in order to, I guess, convince her that he's not all that bad, he goes to essentially like a puppy orphanage.
Kind of, yeah.
Like run out of an abandoned church.
Yeah, like this abandoned church or cathedral, whatever it is. They go up to the very top of like whatever the belfry area is, and they bring some pizzas to these adorable little puppies.
Yeah. And adorable rainbow puppies.
All these. Very cute little rainbow puppies, and their, I don't know if it's, like, their guardian or adoptive mother, Flo, who's a collie, that she and Charlie clearly have some kind of business, or, like, previous relationship. It's mm-hmm. not really stated whether or not any of those kids are Charlie's.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't appear to be, since none of the breeds would match, but...
Yeah.
Who knows? He has some history with this, dog lady.
Yeah, with Flo.
So.
So then they have a sweet little song which convinces Anne-Marie for...
All of, like, 3
about
seconds.
About the space of the song.
And all the benefits of sharing. Yeah. Like, it's called, The More You Share, The More You're Gonna Get, or something. Yeah, it's very weird, because, I don't know, what's your stance on having songs where kids sing directly? It can work really well, or it can be very
yeah, weird. I think in general, kid voice acting is sort of a... crap shot.
Like, yeah, like
you either get really good or you're really bad.
Yeah, so like,
there's no real middle ground.
Not really. But what happens after the little song and dance is that Anne-Marie realizes that Charlie had stolen the wallet of the couple that she had befriended when they were at the horse race, and
decides to go find them and return the wallet.
Yeah, and she's very like disappointed in Charlie, and she is very angry at him.
Right, and I think that's when he like falls asleep or something.
Yeah, he has some kind of stress induced nightmare.
Yeah, in which he like descends into hell.
Yeah, like it is literally into hell.
No, yeah, it's intense. Like there's a lake of lava. There's a giant like dog skeleton in a black robe. It's little like dog imps, giant dog Satan.
All these little demons and stuff, and like he gets crawled all over, nearly drowns in the lava.
And then he wakes up, of course.
Yeah, and he wakes up perched on top of a broom because he's so petrified.
Yeah.
And the kids that are like the puppies let him know that Anne-Marie went over to visit the family that he had taken the wallet from to return it. And,
right, and they have so he goes to the house as well.
Yeah. And she seems to be getting along really well with the family. They make her breakfast and everything. She explains where her living situation is, and I think
the junkyard with yeah. Charlie.
I live in the junkyard with my dog.
And yeah.
And the woman is immediately like, "We should probably go in this other room. Will you excuse us for a second, Emery? We have to delouse her now. There's no way she does not have some kind of lice. It's essential that we steam all the carpets and bleach everything. Now, Howard! Now! I will not have it." No, like, I think they, well, like, they go in there and they start, like, talking about,
yeah,
like,
oh, about like adopting her.
Maybe we should adopt her, but... Of course, Charlie, lo and behold, shows up near their little windowsill thingy and...
Full of flowers.
And he convinces Anne-Marie to come with him, like, that he's reformed or that he is changed or something. But really, it's just for him to be able to use her again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unsurprisingly.
So he convinces her to come back, and they actually have, like, a kind of, like a fun, sweet day together.
Mm-hmm.
During which Carface tries to kill him
yeah.
with a ray gun.
So, Killer mentions in a scene earlier that he had gotten this, like, Flash Gordon atomic ray gun or something. And apparently it actually works. It's basically
him. It's like a Tommy gun.
No, like he bought a Tommy gun. That's what it is. And which they have to mount on the back of another great Dane to make sure that they can actually hold up the gun. Otherwise, yeah. Killer can't fire it without something propping them.
Yeah, with just a ridiculous kickback, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So they try and kill Charlie with that, but they can't because his time... He keeps winding the watch, so his time isn't up.
Well, then the watch does not get damaged.
Watch isn't damaged by it, so...
As they're hiding from Carface and his thugs in this little over-the-pier, storage thing? I don't know what it is. Sure I don't even know. It might be, just a dockside little thing. But anyway, they fall through some rotten floorboards into the kind of dockside area and get carried away.
Well, yeah, it was like they built a dock on top of another dock, basically.
That was weird.
Yeah, it was a little strange.
I
thought it was super cool because that's the kind of weird stuff I think is neat, but also
it was architecturally completely impractical.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Architecturally, it's dumb.
Like how enormous this entire structure is. It's just like why would someone make it like this?
why
are these ceilings so high? Like how big is this thing?
Yeah.
But yeah, so. It takes us to a scene that is very inconsequential. It basically has nothing to do with anything.
It does, but it really doesn't. It's kind of out of nowhere, but also, it does introduce an element later in the film, so it doesn't seem like a total, deus ex machina type of thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
They're captured by some kind of small rodent or something.
Rodents. It's like obviously. Yeah.
Obviously more than one, but we just don't remember what they are.
I think they're mice, or they might be like muskrats or shrews or something, I forget. But
some sort of small rodent thing. Yeah,
but either way, Anne-Marie cannot understand them. So so they're being carried out as though they're sacrifices to some kind of deity or god, and we find out that it's an alligator.
A giant, flamboyant alligator.
Flamboyant. I thought you said flamboyant.
It may have sounded like I said
flamboyant.
Well, he is buoyant.
He is quite buoyant, isn't he?
He's a gator.
Yeah, he's a gigantic gator with, it's voiced by the same guy who did the voice of Oogie Boogie in Nightmare Before Christmas, and you can tell because his singing voice is pretty much the same.
Pretty
much the exact same thing.
So he hears Charlie scream, I think, and he decides he's not going to eat Charlie.
Well, yeah, Charlie howls, and he's like, I can't eat something that has that beautiful of a singing voice.
Right.
And then they have this little duet between the two of them that involves synchronized swimming, at least on the part of the alligator.
Yeah, Charlie doesn't have to do much. He just kind of sits on the alligator the whole time. Yeah. And I think Anne-Marie also does.
I mean, he still sings, but...
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is he doesn't have to do any physical work.
Yeah, no, not at all. But later we find out, or a little bit after the song, we realize that Anne-Marie is sick.
She's catching something.
Yeah, she appears to be on the brink of pneumonia just because she's been in cold water for so long and her body's not been able to...
Yeah, well, and her clothes are therefore probably wet.
Yeah, they're soaked, so she's getting sick.
Yeah.
And, Charlie brings her back to the church where, Flo and the puppies are and everything are.
Right, and so then we get this, somewhere in that, I think... There's a scene of Itchy is alone at the casino, and Carface shows up.
He and his posse beat up Itchy.
Obviously we don't see that,
but we see the aftermath.
It cuts back to them at the church, and Itchy limps in because one of his legs is so messed up.
Well, no, one of his legs is broken.
Was it blown?
Yeah, that's why he was limping with it. Okay. He had to keep one of the legs up because it was broken. And cut over to see Charlie talking with Itchy, where Itchy's explaining that I can't believe you weren't there because
you were hanging out with this little girl.
Yeah, because you were hanging out with Anne-Marie because you've gotten soft. You care about the kid now, and it's like, look, that's our place. Carface and his men or his posse, his dogs, whatever, set it on fire. They torched the entire thing. Everything that we have now is gone. I say we just start from the ground up, go somewhere else, and then just start a new life without the kid.
Yeah.
And it's... Charlie is... He's kind of torn, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's a... I mean, it's a good scene for Itchy, because it's very, like... It's a very strong, heartfelt...
It really
plea,
is. Where it's like, you can't believe how Itchy has been this loyal for so long.
Yeah.
Like, Charlie has really not kind of demonstrated that he cares as
much
about...
Yeah, that he's got, like, the same sort of...
Yeah, he does not seem to have the same capacity for... like, empathy, like, understanding
oh, yeah,
what another person
not.
Is at all. Like, what Itchy's feeling or what he's put up with up until this point, where it's like, Charlie has been pretty much just a selfish jerk.
Yeah,
the entire movie.
Absolutely. So then he sort of puts on this false bravado, being like, listen, I don't care about the kid. I'm just using her, so we're gonna start over, we're gonna use her again.
And eventually then we'll just dump her in an orphanage so that they don't have to deal with her anymore. And, of course, Anne-Marie
hears
all of this as she's going down the staircase, and she hears Charlie and then sees him and is completely heartbroken.
Yeah.
And calls him a bad dog and just runs away.
Yeah.
Because she lost what she thought was one of her friends.
Yeah.
And
she runs out, and then we hear her scream.
Yeah. And
pretty much right away.
Yeah, like pretty much immediately after getting out of the church. And it's implied that Carface and his dog
took
her. So Charlie goes after them.
Right, Charlie goes after them, and then she's dropped her doll.
Mm-hmm.
And so Flo tells Itchy to go find the couple
mm-hmm.
and where to find them. So Itchy goes like around New Orleans, slowly gathering an army of dogs.
Yeah, similar to the Twilight Bark in 101 Dalmatians, if you've ever seen that.
And eventually, like, just shows up on their lawn at what... You know, clearly it's like 10 or 11 because they're asleep.
Basically. And we get such a weird, it's such a kind of strange thing because even though the scene's very emotional, there was one weird thing that Robbie and I noticed about, like, when they actually get to the family's house is that when the, so the couple are woken up by the dogs, like, there's just a ton of dogs outside of their house. They're all barking like crazy trying to get them to follow them. And we see that his wife is
wearing
high heels at 3 o'clock in the morning or whenever it's supposed to be. It's like super
duper. Regardless, the woman's in high heels, a negligee,
and
like a sheer robe.
And it's like, why would she bother putting on high heels?
Yeah, like she's
like,
in her home.
It's like midnight. You don't have to wear shoes. You're not obligated to wear shoes like for that.
Yeah, like this isn't like she's coming outside.
Like, and it's not like they're even
after,
like
putting them on after coming outside. She's like in the house with them on. It's so strange.
Yeah. Oh, because it's not even like they're her nights, like they're her night pumps or something. It's like it would be one thing if they were like you know. See, I bet there's got to be a market for something like that, making like slippers that look like pumps. I would totally buy that.
You would buy it, or you would buy that.
I would buy that. I would buy that patent and sell it to someone else because I would not use them. Because I can't, because my feet are already messed up.
Oh, fair enough.
No, like, I don't know. I just thought it was so weird.
It was so weird.
Why is she wearing pumps in the middle of the night?
It distracted us for the rest of the movie.
Basically, yeah, exactly.
So then it cuts to Charlie finds Anne-Marie, who...
They're back at Charlie and
Carface's
place.
Charlie and Carface's place.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, I've got to save Anne-Marie, and then, like, all of Carface's men jump him.
Yeah, basically.
So he's fighting all of them, and then in the process of that, one of them bites him,
mm-hmm.
and he howls again.
Yeah. And the alligator hears him.
And the alligator hears him and starts moving towards him, and then, they manage to subdue him, and they tie him to an anchor.
Yeah.
And just start slowly lowering him into the water.
So they can drown him again once and for
all. Yeah, and all this while Anne-Marie is, like, coughing, because, again, she's got pneumonia or something.
Yeah, even though she's still in Carface's clutches.
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
So then as he's, once he gets under the water, but I think his watch is still safe somehow.
So what happens is that, like, actually, it was kind of weird. When Carface was taunting Charlie a little bit earlier, he had stuck a candy cane in his mouth. Like, apparently, candy canes are one of Carface's vice. I think he just has an oral fetish or something. I don't even know.
Huh.
But, like, so sometimes Carface will have candy canes, and he had shoved one into Charlie's mouth as, like, a way of making fun of him.
Oh,
and
right.
What happened was Charlie had gotten the watch up on part of the hook of the candy cane.
Yeah,
he's spinning from water to make sure he could keep it out of the water as long as possible, which I thought was actually a really nice touch.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
I thought that was really cool.
So the alligator, when he's underwater, the alligator swims by and, like, frees him.
Yeah, and bites his ropes off.
Yeah, yeah. And then he gets out. Carface flips out. It's so funny.
Yeah.
And then
the quadruple take, he had the,
It was so weird. It was so funny, though. So then he, the alligator man just, like, he knocks the, he, like, hits the boat and knocks Carface into the water or something. Yeah. So he then the last we see of Carface is him being chased by the alligator.
Yeah, where he is eaten.
Yeah, he is definitely eaten by the gator. And then somewhere in the scuffle, I don't remember quite how, the boat gets lit on fire.
Oh, no, yeah, what happens is I think it might have been something either knocked something over, like,
yeah, like Scarface was smoking
or something. Oh, no, there were, like, barrels of oil or something that were tipped over. Yeah, and right. There was, like, some kind of oil spill that happened on the water, and then that got lit on fire. And, yeah.
So the boat's on fire.
The boat and the water are on fire.
Yeah, like, the water's on fire. We're in trouble. Yeah,
exactly. This is not Lake Erie in the 70s.
So Charlie gets separated from his watch somewhere in the thing. So he has to either save Anne-Marie or save the watch. And, of course,
he's not a total jerk. And he's like, you know what? I have to save Anne-Marie. So he rescues her from drowning, puts her on top of a box, and sends her adrift outside of the ship to safety.
Well, yeah, he definitely gets her, like, a little out of the ship and then tries to go down for his watch, but it's too late.
Yeah, the mechanisms have already started filling with water, and you can see that he's starting to weaken, and then eventually the clock stops.
Yeah, and then
the ship explodes.
Yeah, the ship explodes, and Anne-Marie floats conveniently to the shore. Well, no, she floats a bit, and then Killer pushes her the rest of the way to the shore where all the dogs and the couple are waiting.
Yeah, and other various townsfolk too.
Yeah, yeah, there were probably some cops.
Yeah. And it's very sad. The next scene we cut to is with Anne-Marie recovering in bed at the family's house.
Yeah, yeah, and then, like, the whole sky turns a terrifying red.
A terrifying shade of red with a bunch of, like, weird smoke and this very, like, obviously satanic voice going, "Charlie."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's super creepy.
And then I think there's like a, it's like a pillar of light or something.
Oh no, it's like, it's basically like the Angel Whippet comes, like, she appears basically how Glinda does in The Wizard of Oz. She just, like, shows up. She, like,
oh,
shows
yeah, up. Like a little bubble.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, "No, I need a minute. Look, let me talk to this guy."
She so then there's like a pillar of light or something though that Charlie walks out of.
Well, yeah, no, like, what happens is that, like, initially he comes through the red.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah.
He comes through, like, some kind of, like, red pillar of, like, from, like, hell.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, so then he, and talks to Anne-Marie for a little bit, and says, like, "Hey, take care of Itchy."
Yeah, he really needs somebody now. Like, Itchy's gonna be a nervous wreck, he needs you.
Yeah.
So, more so than he already was.
Yeah, 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 right.
But, yeah.
So, and then the Whippet, kind of appears and, I guess, takes him back up to heaven for...
Well, she says, like, "What you did was completely selfless, and you've earned your right to come back into heaven."
Yeah.
So...
And so that's,
like, you have to say goodbye to Anne-Marie, and then we're gonna bring you back up.
Right.
So...
And then, we get the scene in heaven where, the Whippet's going through the whole "this is heaven" thing with Carface, and he grabs his clock, and she's like, "Don't touch that clock! I said, don't touch that clock!"
And then it goes into, like, some kind of Southern Baptist voice.
Yeah,
like,
it's
like, a baritone or a tenor. Oh, I don't care. It's just you and me. Let's make music together. Let's make sweet harmony. Do I take the ray? You better hang on to me. We
are birds of a feather, looking for the light. Oh man, but it's a good time. I really like this movie.
Absolutely.
It's a lot darker than I remember it. Or actually, no, maybe it's just as dark as I remember it, but I didn't realize what dark was at that point.
Yeah, like, well, because I watched it
I watched it like a couple of years ago or something. So
yeah.
I probably had a more recent sense of it.
Well,
I was like, that movie was dark.
No, yeah, I mean, well, because I remember watching it when I was a kid because my best friend had the VHS copy of it at the time. And we would watch it sometimes, like, if she wanted to watch a Disney movie, she'd come over to my house, and, you know, vice versa. We would, like, trade VHSs all the time. And I guess what happened was that, I guess, like, there was a part of me that really liked it just because I was obsessed with dogs when I was a kid. Still pretty much am. Nothing has changed. But I don't know, like, I think there was just something that I knew that was kind of off about it because I knew that some of the subject matter was a little bit darker. Or like that, you know, like I didn't really know a lot about like gambling, smoking, drinking, all that other
stuff.
Yeah,
right. Like that stuff just like flew over our heads.
Yeah.
As kids.
Well, that or we were taught that like, you know, don't do any of that stuff. Like that's a sin. Like, you know, all that. Like I was not really that religious, or at least I stopped being a religious when I turned like 10. Cause I think we just all decided we got too busy. So, we're just like, look, like we really need
this.
Well, like, we really need this Sunday to like go do this and this.
Man.
So we just kind of, it just kind of worked itself out of convenience, I guess. So, but no, I think I really like this movie because I think Don Bluth, just in general, his style of animation, how fluid it is, how much detail goes into it, the fact that he can still make some pretty well-rounded characters, or at least, like, very, like, well-explored characters.
Yeah.
Like, they have very definitive personalities, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And within a relatively short amount of time, because this movie is quite short. It's
about
80 minutes.
Well, actually, and I would definitely agree with that, because weirdly, over the weekend, I watched Thumbelina on a whim.
Did you really? Was it on Netflix?
No, it's on Amazon Instant.
Oh, gotcha.
And they're, like, sort of the same thing, where, like, that, like, and that one's ridiculous. Like, that's really, like, a... Like,
it really is.
Like, it's a bit of an... It's a bit of an epic.
I mean, it's one of the more outlandish ones that he's ever done.
Yeah, but what I mean is, like, it just kind of keeps going.
Yeah.
Like,
does it just not slow down, or what?
I mean, it slows down. It's not as though it's, like, a breakneck pace or anything. It's just, like, alright, like, she gets kidnapped by these guys, and then she escapes from them, and she meets this guy, and then that guy ditches her, and then she ends up over here, and then this. It's like,
isn't Gilbert Gottfried a beetle in that?
He is!
That's
one of my
so
favorite
crazy.
Scenes. Because they put her in this whole, like, he's like, I guess Gilbert Gottfried's beetle character thought he could trick the other beetles into thinking she was a beetle, so she had this, like, super elaborate, pretty beetle, like, dress that she was wearing.
Hmm. Okay, then.
It was really pretty. Like, you would really enjoy it, but...
Fair enough.
It was weird. Like, it was a weird movie. Everyone wanted to marry her.
Yeah, basically.
Like,
well,
like,
and then she was also voiced by the same actress who did The Little Mermaid.
I knew it!
Oh my gosh.
Like, no, I was watching and I was like, that is such a Disney princess voice. It's driving me crazy.
Well, wait, like, did you recognize her singing voice at all?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
I was wondering.
I was going to look it up and then I got lazy.
No, yeah, the voice actress for that is, her name is Jodie Benson.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But yeah, Thumbelina is another good Don Bluth movie. So Don Bluth, if you didn't know, is, was sort of this off-again, on-again Disney animator.
Yeah, he has kind of a strange relationship with them.
Yeah. So, like, he started, he did, like, a year of college and then got a job at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And then quit it 2 years later. And then came back, like, another, like, 10 or 12 years later.
Yeah.
Like, because he worked for them in the 70s, because he did Robin Hood. He did work on Robin Hood, Pete's Dragon, and a third movie that escapes me.
Was it Fox and the Hound?
I think he did work on Fox and the Hound.
I know for a fact he did most of the animation on Young Todd.
Okay, but
it's like,
That's not the one I'm thinking of.
Late 70s?
Yeah, like mid-late 70s.
Man, what did they do in the mid-late 70s? Jungle Book.
No.
Rescuers.
That was it.
Rescuers?
Rescuers. He'd work on the
Rescuers.
Rescuers. I don't
know. Did he do Evinrude? Remember the Dragonfly?
I hope he did Evinrude.
I secretly wish they did Evinrude.
Oh, I love Evinrude.
Me too.
He's such a fun little
That'd
guy.
That'd be a weird name for a band.
Evinrude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
He left in 78.
He got involved with Disney at a weird point because, when did Walt die? I think he died in, like, the late 50s, I want to say.
Okay, yeah, and he got hired in like 55 or something like that.
Douglas did?
Initially.
Okay, yeah,
when he first got hired, it was like 55-ish.
Okay, yeah, so I think what happened was, like, I think the studio itself was just at kind of a weird crossroads at that point, because I think the last movie that they had made with Walt was... Man, I really wish I remember this. I feel like, because I used to have the theme that
yeah.
I used. I think that I think the last one was probably like the Jungle Book, I want to say.
Huh.
And then I think he passed away.
Okay.
Something like that, anyway. But, yeah, so anyway, after that, I think they had kind of felt like they lost part of their vision. So they had had a bunch of these incredibly talented animators that were there. Including the, what was it, the Nine Old Men or something, which is, like, that was, like, their veteran team of people that were involved with making Disney films. So, like, the animators that worked on Dumbo, the ones that worked on Bambi, the ones that worked on Pinocchio, all those guys. Like, most of the ones who had, like, done all the original, like, character designs and got Disney established with the fluid animation that they're known for today.
Yeah.
Or, like, what their style was, how they approached doing adaptations, all that stuff.
Okay.
So those guys were around for the longest time.
Right. And then Don Bluth joined and then left again.
Yeah.
But so in 78, he left Disney, and then 79, like, on his birthday, actually.
Yeah.
He and a bunch, actually took some with him when he left, some other Disney animators. They founded Don Bluth Studios, and they did a couple, they did a short, they did the animated sequence in that piece of garbage Xanadu.
Yep, sorry, Olivia Newton-John. I still think it's garbage.
Yeah, just awful.
I mean, you practically ruined ELO for me, and that's not okay with me. I love ELO. Electric Light Orchestra?
Yes.
Yes. Now he gets it. Now you see. I do like that song, I'm Alive, but that's about it.
My brain went to Last Unicorn. I love that song.
They were not in that.
I know they weren't in that.
That was America.
I know. That was America.
America.
But so they made they did that, and then the only movie, the only feature length thing they did was The Secret of Nim, which got kind of a lukewarm response. Which
I mean, well, like now it's looked on as his masterpiece.
Yeah.
Like his magnum opus,
which is
Which, I mean, like, I really do like
the Secret of Nim.
I really do like The Secret of Nim. I think, like, my favorite is probably going to have to be... I'm sort of going to sound like such a girl. I really do like Anastasia. He's giving me such guff right now. But, like, no, I mean, like, I also really like... man, I do like American Tail, but I remember it freaking me out
when I
was a kid.
I think we watched it like a few years ago, like, and we were like, what the heck?
Yeah, we were so, like, I felt tore up at the end of it, because I'm like, this kid, he can't be older than, like, what, six, maybe?
Yeah, no, he's a baby.
Like, well, it's like, in the span of, like, how long? Like, maybe a week, he loses his family, has nowhere to live.
Yeah.
He's living as an alien in New York, where, like, he had emigrated from Russia.
In, like, the early 1900s, too?
No, this is 1886.
Oh, yeah.
Like, right during the Great, like, migration. Well, it was because of the pilgrims.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I mean, like, he has no friends. He gets basically sold into slavery by a bunch of nefarious characters that just want to use him to get money.
It's a ruthless movie.
It just does not let up for a while. It's like, I really do hope that this kid finds his family, because he friggin' deserves it after all this garbage.
Yeah. So that was a movie he made with Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
And so was...
As part of Amblin Animation.
Yeah, Amblimation. Yeah.
I think that was the first one they made, actually.
Yeah, I think we talked about this in one of our other attempts.
Yeah, exactly. But we're bringing it back now, so it's new to you.
Well, yeah.
Maybe. Not really.
I don't know if that was their first one, but it was probably, like, their first big one, because then Fievel became their mascot.
Yeah, exactly.
In the same way that Totoro became... Ghibli's mascot.
Well, I think it was with that one is, what is it? Like, it ended up being the, like, a little bit more profitable.
Than
Nim. Because Nim did not do as well.
Well, yeah, Nim, I mean, the company declared bankruptcy after Nim.
But now it's a cult classic.
Well, yeah, I think that truly is Don Bluth's legacy.
It really is, which is a real shame.
It's a dang shame. Like, All Dogs Go to Heaven came out in 1989 alongside The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, well, no, and I think that that was just kind of like a big old middle finger from Disney. Yeah. It's like, how dare you abdicate from us? How dare you leave our studio? And it's like, just as they were starting to experience their own renaissance, they got into this weird thing of, I know that we had mentioned before on a previous episode about dueling that goes on between studios, like, say... DreamWorks did, they released Ants shortly after Pixar released A Bug's Life, or they released The Road to El Dorado shortly after The Emperor's New Groove was released.
That was the one.
Yeah, so that was, I think that was the one where he brought up this example, but... Disney did the same thing with Don Bluth to an extent.
A little bit, they kind of shoved him into the ground.
Well, it was more of like, they deliberately decided to have their openings overlap or come very close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, with the release of The Little Mermaid, they had just entered into the Renaissance, because The Little Mermaid did so well that all the movies leading up, leading after that, until maybe around like Pocahontas, I believe. All did really, really well.
Yeah.
I think that was called the unofficial end of the Disney Renaissance. The official end, I think, was Tarzan, which was 1999.
Huh.
So, because Hercules did not do as well as it could have. Hunchback did not do as well as it could have. Even though I adore Hunchback, I think it's one of the most underrated Disney movies ever. Do you remember? Have you seen that one?
Yes, I did. Yeah, actually, I watched it fairly recently.
Yeah, I adore that movie. I think it's wonderful.
I mean, it's grim for Disney.
It really is. I mean, like, of all stories for them to cover, you would never expect them to do The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
It's a weird choice.
Because there's so much, like, inappropriate stuff that it's like, why is this in a children's film?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, why would you go with that? Because it's not even remotely a children's story.
I think that's why I like it, because it's just, like, an animated version of a story that's supposed to be, like, kind of grim sort of depressing, but, like, at the end of the day, it's still hopeful. Like, I think they... added that hopeful veneer that it needed a little bit, except for the gargoyles. I thought they were annoying.
Yeah, but, what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, but I mean, like, they have to have a little bit more levity in there.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another trait of Don Bluth that I like, is most, like, pretty much all of his movies have, they're sad, but they all have these sort of, at least, moments in them that are sort of, like, very dark and, like, almost grim. Like, Secret of Nim is really good, but, like, it is really intense.
The overarching plot is that they have to make sure that Mrs. Brisby can get her son well enough before they all get straight up killed
by
the tractor as it, like, plows over their home. And, like,
absolutely.
Will, like, kill him or smother her son to death.
Yeah, exactly. So that one's pretty grim.
Hell and the Penguin was a little bit grim, even though Don Bluth technically did. I've
not watched that one.
I remember seeing it, but, like, I know that he has disowned the feature because it both did so poorly, and I think he just was unsatisfied with how it turned out.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I don't want to have anything more to do with this.
There wasn't a great deal of it in Thumbelina.
Not really.
I mean, that was
supposed to be a bit lighter fare anyway, though. I think they were just like, we need a little bit less death from you.
Yeah, we need a lighter palette.
It's like, I think after Rockadoodle, they were like, we need to have something a little bit kinder.
I love Rockadoodle.
You do, but you should really watch it again. And see
I tried, and then they took it off Netflix.
No!
So I couldn't watch it
I bet it's on Amazon Prime or something. Seriously, I mean, like, rewatch it, because, like, I remember seeing Rockadoodle and just being completely perplexed as to what was going on. I mean, well, a lot of the story does not make sense, dude. Like, try rewatching it, and it's just, I think you'll be, I don't want to say pleasantly surprised, I think you'll be, I think you'll be disarmingly disappointed. I don't know.
We have different expectations of movies sometimes.
Because I remember really liking Rockadoodle when I was a kid, and now that I see it as an adult, I'm like, oh, okay. what's going on here?
Oh, man.
But, I think it's a real shame that overall that Don Bluth's movies do not have as much notoriety as Disney movies do. I think it's a real shame because in terms of, I think just like artistic merit, the way that I think he's fantastic at establishing settings and stuff. Some of those backgrounds and everything are spectacular.
Oh yeah, beautiful, beautiful
great.
Work.
They're absolutely fantastic.
No, and he does do like visually very good, like very pretty things that I think are probably. And I think he pushes, I think he kind of pushes boundaries a bit more than Disney did.
Absolutely. Well, I think maybe that's why he wanted to go to his own studio, because he knew that he would be able to do the stories that Disney would never allow.
Yeah, yeah, he would be able to, and he would be able to do it in his way.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, because, I mean, he's direct, I mean, he didn't direct any of the movies they did for Disney.
Yeah.
Right? But he directed everything, like, everything else he worked on, pretty much he directed.
Physically,
with,
yeah,
like, the exception of, like, the two video games he worked on.
Yeah, oh, Dragon's Lair?
Dragon's, yeah, Lair, yeah, and, no, I don't think he worked on the second one.
Well.
They tried to revive it, like,
I remember that, like, they tried to bring it back on the recently. Wii or something.
Yeah,
or,
I don't,
like,
remember.
I think it was, like, either the Wii or Steam. And something like
that.
Oh,
it's on Steam, like the actual game.
No, yeah, yeah, Lord, it's like, but now it's just like, it's just, it's like a memorization thing where you have to go, like, hit the left arrow, hit the right arrow whenever this thing flashes.
Right. Well, there's also, there's like a Space Quest or something that's, it's the same basic idea.
Yeah, I remember hearing
a sci-fi. It's a Galloping Ghost.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, didn't we play that at Galloping Ghost?
So I found out about it.
They had Dragon's Lair there for the longest time. I don't know if they still do. Maybe they swapped them out.
Maybe.
Whatever it was. But, yeah, it's, I thought that was actually really cool, the fact that he got involved with those video games.
Yeah, yeah, I wish he'd done, they tried to revive it in, like, 2003 or something like that, and it did not,
work.
Yeah, it didn't pan out. And that's, like, I think he hasn't done, like, anything since. He teaches now, that's mostly what he does.
He teaches, I think he might have done a few smaller projects.
Yeah, but he might
I think he officially retired from doing, like, studio work a while
ago.
But now, like, as far as I can tell, he seems to have a pretty successful, animation school.
Yeah, which is good.
So, which is nice.
He deserves some success.
It's based at Scottsdale, Arizona, so you can tell that I'm sure he's doing fine. Yeah, I know. I know you don't like Arizona.
I don't
really care for it either. But,
It
is certainly a state. Apologies to Arizonans. We're not from there, so, you know.
We're not.
We're going to go ahead and pass judgment, I guess.
Yep. I'm going to.
All right. He owns it.
Freely.
We should get into a little bit of the lesser, like, less good aspects of the film.
Oh, like Judith Barse?
Yeah, that thing.
Okay. So, Anne-Marie was voiced by a little girl named Judith Barse, who also did the voice for Ducky and also tragically died at the age of 10.
Yeah.
So what happened is, her father and her mother actually both, like, fled from, like, some Eastern European countries.
Yeah.
I think, like, one of them fled from Hungary.
And the other one was, like, Czechoslovakia or something.
I don't think it was Czechoslovakia, but it was some Eastern European country.
Yeah.
That probably got absorbed into the USSR or something.
Presumably. I think, were they fleeing at that point because they wanted to make sure that they stayed separate?
You know, I'm not entirely sure.
But this would have been around, like, 1980, so.
Was it?
Wait, because she, Judith was born
right, well, she
in,
was 10, yeah, so she
so
was.
She was born in 77. No, sorry, 78.
So anyways, I think that had a lot to do with the mental instability of,
like,
her father.
PTSD, trying to escape,
and
not being able to get therapy to
emotional
and psychological.
Didn't
damage.
He also, like, kind of turn to alcohol a bit for that?
Oh, you know, he was a raging alcoholic.
He's
not a very pleasant person.
No, so he kind of, like, progressively got worse. He kind of resented his daughter for her success.
Yeah.
And ended up, I think, like, he got very drunk, and
he had threatened to kill himself many times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He would be very
verbally and emotionally abusive to them, and physically abusive as well.
Yeah.
So he
ended up, and he was drunk, and he killed both his wife and his daughter.
Shot them.
Yeah, shot them, and then lit the house on fire and shot himself.
Yeah.
Which, super grim.
Yeah, we, finding that out was absolutely horrifying.
No, and, yeah, it kind of broke my heart.
The fact that Judith was 10 years old when she was murdered by her father.
Yeah.
And, it's a real shame, because this was the last movie that she ever made, and she never even got to see it finished.
Yeah, actually,
She died before the movie premiered.
Yeah, and that was one of the things is, Don Bluth,
poor Mr. Bluth.
Obviously took it very hard, and he kind of, dedicated the movie to her. And so, a lot of the, like, physical mannerisms and the way that she looks is actually based on Judith Barcy herself.
Yeah, what she had looked like at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, admittedly, she had Anne-Marie's hair, but, like, the rest of it was spot on. Rest, like, I mean, if you look at, like, pictures of her at that point, it's spot on.
Yeah.
It's crazy how similar they look. And it's so sad. Like, this poor little girl, she never really got to have any other sort of, like, career. She didn't she lost her life because her father was so jealous and insecure that he had to do the ultimate, I thought it was just horrible. Like, it made me so upset to find that out.
Yeah, yeah.
This poor kid.
And
her mom, of course, her mom, too. Yeah. So that's something of, that's kind of like the dark cloud that was hanging over. When it came out, wherein... but, like, the rest of the film, I guess, is, like, why do you think it's so memorable, or why do you think it stuck around as long as it did? Just because it's such a weird concept, or...
I don't know, I mean, like, I think part of it is just attributed, I think part of it you can just attribute to, Don Bluth and, like, the quality of the animation, but I think also, like, Charlie is a jerk.
Yeah.
But he's a very charismatic jerk.
Yes.
And there's something, like, about, like, a charismatic con man or con artist that I think people enjoy. Like, you enjoy watching that character, whether you enjoy watching him fail or him succeed. You invest yourself in the adventures of that character.
Mm-hmm.
So I think... Not only do we have that character who is...
and you personally, favor con artists.
Love con artists.
He really does.
Like, that was one of my favorite things. That was probably my favorite line. One of my favorite lines from Schmendrick in The Last Unicorn. He's like, "You really deserve a good wizard, but you're gonna have to settle for a 2-bit thief."
Aww.
I'm like, oh, Schmendrick.
But he gets what he is.
Yeah, he's honest about who he is, which is nice. So, like, I love con man characters for that reason. But so I think taking that charismatic character and bringing him through, like, the sort of peaks and valleys of, like, you know, he starts at a low point, builds himself to a high, not even to a high point, he starts
Well, it's a superficial high point, because, like, even though he's being financially successful, it's like, there's no
I'm not even talking about that. Like, he gets up, like, he starts... by getting out of prison.
Oh, right.
And then immediately down. Right. And then, like, shoots up and then down.
I mean, well, yeah, like, his life and is then, basically a roller coaster. Where it's like...
And then back up at the end. And like, not only is it, you know, things have gone up for him, but he also has redeemed himself.
Yes. I will say, at the very least, Charlie is very much the master of his own destiny. In that, like, he will stop at nothing to make sure he gets exactly what he wants.
Yeah, yeah.
So... Yeah, I think it was... Charlie actually had a pretty interesting arc in that, like, I feel like he finally actually learned something at the very end.
It's like,
it really took a little girl basically about to die to get you to stop being so selfish for 5 minutes to actually bother doing something for somebody else without expecting something in return. It's like, but like, that, for a character as... who appeared to be, for a while, completely irredeemable. Tremendous. Like, the fact that he actually managed to be able to give a crap about someone else.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Even though it wasn't itchy, it should have been itchy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Anne-Marie is, you know, like, she definitely deserved it, too.
Yeah.
But I hope that eventually he and Itchy had reached some kind of compromise.
I wonder a little bit about Itchy, because he's kind of this, like, almost this long-suffering companion.
Do you think
know?
A part of him likes it? Like, maybe he's got a masochistic streak? I don't know. I mean, it would explain as to why he's been with Charlie for so long.
I think there's something in their history that is probably,
like, Charlie must have saved Itchy's life.
Yeah, like, some kind of, something,
like, he's got, like, he's a blood
something,
brother.
Yeah, something that he feels almost indebted to him, and also, and,
like
because
he's a vassal?
Been...
Kinda.
Not what I was going for, but sure, why
like,
not?
Like, he's the, what is it, the, Sancho Panza or something? Like, who's Don Quixote's His sidekick.
I think he does. I think he does kind of feel that he should be Charlie's sidekick.
Yeah. Where it's like he knows that what Charlie is doing is stupid, but he stays and supports him regardless.
Yeah, well,
because
a part of him believes
in what's going on. Like,
yeah, and I think there's just a part. I mean, I think as a result of the fact that they've been together for a while, he actually, you know, gives a dang about Charlie.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and so I think he maybe is like sort of personally invested in Charlie being around.
Yeah, well, then Charlie clearly is invested and interested in Itchy's inventiveness, his resourcefulness.
Yeah, like I think there's a level at which Charlie also is invested in.
Yeah, like they've got a pretty solid relationship from what I can tell.
Yeah, yeah. I wish we'd seen more of it.
Yeah, well, then it's
in that movie.
I know, and it's parts of it are disproportionate because of like Charlie is he can be a steamroller when he wants something.
Right. Yeah.
So. And we'll completely disregard Itchy if he needs to. But overall, I don't know, do we want to do any other like final thoughts and stuff? Like any other reasons as to what stuck with us about the movie?
Weirdly, I've said this in our other recordings, but like,
yeah.
Weirdly, one thing that you would think would stick for me was the hell scene, because I remember watching the movie a bunch when I was a kid.
Well, you'd mentioned that before when we were even thinking about watching this.
Yeah,
the most I really remember out of that movie was like the hell scene, and then what was the other thing? The gator, right?
I remember the gator, and I remember everything else but the hell scene. It's just like that scene. When I watched it a few years ago, I was like, I don't remember this at all.
Yeah,
like I remember everything else. I remember Scarface's weird ray gun. Which is so funny to me, the gator eating him, the whipping angel kind of. Pretty much, the only other scene I don't remember is the very beginning when Itchy's breaking him out of prison.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what is going on? What is happening right now? But
what's happening?
What's this?
Yes!
Sorry.
I mean, like, I think it's just... I don't know. It feels like it was kind of made of its time, too. You know, like, just, like, it feels like a very kind of 80s sort of movie. But, I really do like this movie.
Me too.
There are certain parts about it that I think are either maybe a little bit too slow, or it's just kind of, like, sometimes I feel like it doesn't know exactly what kind of feel it's going for, like, whether it wants to be totally heartfelt, or if it's going for, like, just being really dramatic, or very weird, because it fluctuates between it a lot. I think, if nothing else, maybe the tone of the movie is a little bit uneven.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that was one thing that I just noticed, like, because then the fact that they used the same transition for everything.
Did they?
It was, like, the spiral wipe.
Did they spiral wipe a lot?
Yeah, you know, spiral out. My favorite video game, Spyro, Reptile's Rage. Ripto's Rags. Anyway.
Coming soon to a strip mall near you, Ripto's Rags.
Ripto's Rags.
Oh, man.
But, I think it's a great movie.
I agree. If you have not seen it in the past...
Yeah, I think...
Jeez. Many years.
Yeah. This movie's as old as I am, so...
Yeah, exactly.
26 years, I guess?
Jeez.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about all I've got.
Yeah, I can't really think of much else either.
Yeah.
Check it out, guys. I think we're starting to lose steam because we're both super tired.
Yeah, it's late. For us.
Yeah, so I guess that's.
Yeah, I think
it's probably a good place to leave off.
Yeah.
I suppose.
So,
thank you for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
Sorry if this one was a little bit ramshackle, but we finally got it done.
Yeah.
So
we have it done.
I can't really complain.
Oh man. Yeah. All right.
But thank you again for listening to us on Animation Station. If you would like to contact us, if you have any ideas for episodes, any questions, comments, anything, please feel free to contact us on Twitter.
I put links in the sidebar.
Did you? Did you really?
Yeah.
Hooray.
There's links to our Twitter, so you can...
I put it in my Twitter bio also.
I think I did too. So.
Yeah, no, you did. Actually, no, I learned it by watching you. So,
if you want to talk to us on Twitter.
Yep, please look for us. You can find me at @TCTrash.
And I'm at @lobster_writer.
Yeah.
My
name is also the same on Instagram, if y'all have Instagram. So I'll be putting up the images hopefully soonish, but I would like to just have, like, one stock picture to use in case I can't do the art. Or
that's
if it's
fair.
Just, you know. Just to, well, to be able, also be, to be able to have it for the episodes themselves, or, like, for the channel. Like, on the
app. Oh, like, so we can actually have, like, an icon in the corner.
People. Yeah, like a little logo peoples. So.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for listening, guys. And we'll catch you next time.
we'll get back with you real soon.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.